Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Now joining us from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine, he's a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. He is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, thanks as always for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm trying to figure out the lineups tonight for both teams, because if you thought, we got NHL debuts and first look at a lot of guys in Vancouver of late, if you thought that was a busy roster, the Sharks lost four players to injury last night, called up three from San Jose this morning. They're still not here yet, but we'll be here by game time. Otherwise, that's going to be an exceptionally short San Jose bench.
Wow. All right. So that's something to monitor as we get closer to game time as well. And as you mentioned, a couple of more Canucks will be making their NHL debuts tonight, including in net Nikita Tolopila. What are you watching for? What should fans be expecting to see out of game one for Nikita Tolopila tonight?
Well, I think expectations need to be kept in check, just because not only is this his first NHL game and first taste of this pace, but the defense in front of him, as we've discussed, is not your NHL regulars, right? So even though he's comfortable with those guys and reading off of them because, half of them were in the American League this year, within the structure, within the system, like those reads are just that much harder. Like it's a tough step anyways. Some guys can find, and interesting at his size, Akira Schmid would be a comparison. The game in the NHL is better suited quite often to some of the big goalies in the game in the AHL, where it's more scrambly and broken plays and a game of mistakes, frankly. So sometimes the structure and reads are a little simpler. Guys do what they're supposed to do. They're where they're supposed to be. And bigger goalies playing a little deeper can have some success. But I'm not sure, two games left in the season, given the lineups for both teams, this is one of those times. It could be a trend long-term for him. He's massive. He's got good hands. The thing I'm looking for is can he keep up with the pace? And again, keeping expectations in check about the adjustment required to do so. Laterally, he moves pretty well. There's a tendency a little bit to not rotate into pushes, just kind of push and open, reach a little bit rather than loading up power and making sure you're exploding. So he's a big goalie, but, there's not quite the explosiveness of, say, we see it in a Thatcher Demko. And I think a lot of that is just that tendency to sort of reach first, go a little bit with the limbs rather than rotate into the pushes. And I think that's something that has improved this year at the American Hockey League level compared to last year. This has been kind of a meteoric rise for him, from signing to first year pro North America to making this debut. There's been a lot of progress in the last season, even before that, to even draw the attention of NHL teams. So expectations in check, still excitement, and yet there will be things that he'll probably learn tonight need to improve. I remember Stuart Skinner getting his NHL debut with the Oilers. They won the game, and he told me he walked into the locker room after. It was the only game he played that year. Walked into the locker room after, and after a congratulation from the goalie coach, they looked at each other and said, man, we got a lot of work to do. And sometimes call-ups like this late in the season can be the moment for guys where they go into an offseason focused on different things.
Kevin, does it matter at all that Demko doesn't get any more games this season, just given how this year unfolded for him with, three prolonged absences?
Probably not. And I understand, that there's probably a lot of people looking at illness and, we don't see guys shut down for illness, right?
Yeah. I'm among them. Not that I'm like speculating about anything, Kevin. I did, however, note prominently that I can't remember seeing a guy shut down for illness at any point in my, 13 years covering this league.
And yet it required him, like now you correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think they needed it to be injury or illness for Tolopila to be up.
Yeah.
Right? Like in terms of to be able to make that roster move and let him have this shot and get that taste.
It's not like a commissioner exempt thing. Like, I don't think it goes to that level. But yeah, you'd have to be able to show your paperwork if it came to it.
Right. So, listen, Rick talked about it on camera, and I think even, I'm trying to remember what was on and what was off today, like when the cameras were off and just a little more casual afterwards, but just, you know, and even about Quinn, like, why not shut him down? And it's just, for Demko, it's, why risk it? Like, it really sounded like that's where they're at. Like, why risk something happening now? We know he's in a good spot. He feels good physically. And about the changes he's made in his game, now let's give him an opportunity to start the season strong. Why would you risk anything further happening? Again, in an environment that is quite likely going to be chaotic tonight. I mean, we've seen some of these Sharks games of late. Obviously not Calgary last night, but you think of the 7-6 one against Minnesota. You know, like, there are a lot of elements of these last couple of games beyond the rosters that might not resemble NHL hockey. So why are you going to risk something happening to a goaltender who's already missed, you know, time three different occasions this season with three different injuries? Why are you going to risk offsetting his off season for games that don't mean anything? And so, as much as I do understand the skepticism, you know, Talk's usually a pretty straight shooter on these things, and the way he delivered that today kind of made sense.
Are there any of the sort of tryout guys, the guys who are up from Abbotsford playing roles down the stretch here as you know, an increasing number of Canucks get shut down, that have caught your eye as a player to watch for with an eye toward next season?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious one is Patterson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Ratu as well. Although Rick said nothing there, but he exited a highly optional morning skate a little ahead of everyone else, with a medical person in tow after seeing them on the bench. Didn't see what happened. So, but it sounds like he's going to be fine. Those are the two that stand out, you know, top ahead to me. Even tonight, like, I'm interested to see Tolopilo. I don't know that one game is going to be like, hey, this guy can be our number three and we don't need to add anything, or this guy's passed our TERS based on this night, but you want to see him at this level. But I think it's the guys that have been up here longer, playing a bigger role in more meaningful games when there still was something on the line, that catch your eye more than, you know, the last couple of game of the season debut.
How do you actually, I wanted to get back to Thatcher Demko for a second here, Kevin Woodley, because, you know, we've heard Rick talk it a couple of times yesterday, and then in addressing the media this morning, mention how impressed he is with Thatcher Demko's plan for the summer, and kind of, you know, he's got it almost dialed into a science, kind of a day-by-day thing. And Tockett's also referenced, you know, hey, this is a bit of a new situation for Thatcher Demko going into the summer healthy. How much do you expect that to play a role for Thatcher Demko in, you know, being able to be more durable next season and just coming in a position to hit the ground running next year for the Canucks?
Well, I think it kind of sounds like what we were hearing two summers ago, right? Like, I think it's going to hopefully closer resemble what he did two summers ago. And again, I know that one ended in the knee injury that led into this summer, but got well through and well into that season. Healthy. It's the Vezina Trophy finalist season. I would make the argument he probably has a good shot at winning it, if not for the knee injury. And I've pointed out many times in the past, the knee injury comes that ultimately led to the second knee injury, but that knee injury comes at a point where he played at a 65 start pace for 6 weeks. And so there has to be a lesson there. Last off season was just obviously a disaster, right? Like, we've talked about this. Couldn't do any of his normal training. They didn't have the injury figured out. He's talked about, you know, not really figuring it out until at training camp. None of your normal routines, none of your back on August 1st, working with the goalie coach on a daily basis, building up progressions in all your technical elements, like none of it, none of the things that he does, none of the things that he did 2 years ago to have the season he did. So does it bulletproof you and mean that you'll never be injured again? No. But it certainly gives you a better chance of getting through a season than what happened this year. And, you know, what happened this year was so extreme. I understand the history and why everyone will tie the results and the multiple injuries to it being Demko. But what happened this offseason was so extreme that I think it would probably set a lot of goaltenders back in terms of an inability to come in mid-December, having missed all that time, having missed all that preparation, and develop any type of momentum. And I do think something, you know, like I saw things in his game get better as we got into January, and we saw the results start to come shortly after. So that sort of rediscovery of his process and the keys to it, at least from the outside, what I saw, I think all bodes well. Combine it with a good summer, and I'm not going to say he gets through next season healthy, but it gives him a chance to. And when you look back at the way last summer went, I'm not sure he ever really had a chance.
When you think back, Woodley, kind of the whole season for Thatcher Demko, from coming into training camp with the uncertainty, the unique injury that, as you said, it took them a while to really get figured out, the road back from that, eventually getting in, the kind of ups and downs of his performances, getting re-injured a couple times, leaving games a couple of times, and now finally being shut down towards the end of the year. Did we learn anything new about Thatcher Demko as a player, as a goalie for this whole season? Like, what if you add it all up, what's kind of your takeaway, and how did it change, if at all, how you view Thatcher Demko going forward?
I would say one of the positives that I'm not sure got mentioned much, if at all, is lost in all these injuries, is this was his first season at this level without Ian Clark. And a lot of elite goalies that have built their game around Ian and their work with Ian have taken a long time to find it after losing, either leaving in Markstrom's case or Ian leaving in Sergei Bobrovsky's case. And so the fact that he seemed to rediscover his form sort of, like I said, around mid-January, started leading with vision again, moving in one piece, not reaching. I mean, there was a stretch there before that where I think he gave up more goals from bad angles and dead angles in the course of a week than he had at any other point in his NHL career. And that was really uncharacteristic. And the way he was moving in and out of those posts, whether it was just because of all the time off or what, for whatever reason, it just didn't look the same. And so his ability to rediscover those elements, not having any insights into why, you know, I don't know if that's just something clicked. I don't know if that's work with Marco. I don't know if Ian's still in the organization, if there's any involved. I really genuinely don't know, guys, because I haven't talked to him about it. But the fact he was able to rediscover that in the season and get on a couple of runs where it looked like the old Thatcher Demko. You know, there are other goalies that have, like I said, moved on, or Ian has moved on from them, that took a lot longer, and some that never really kind of got back to that same level. So that's a real positive. And so if nothing else, we've learned that he can do that without having Ian there on a day-to-day basis. That's a big step.
Just making sense of everything we've seen, and especially the last 25 games, Kevin, as this season kind of winds down, but also as it really crescendoed as a disappointing one. What are your lasting impressions, your main takeaways as for why the Canucks fell short and what it means going forward?
I don't know that I can pin it to one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it feel like, I mean, the obvious one is the injuries, right? We talked about Demko. You know, we know about Pettersson. We had a 10-game absence of JT Miller before ultimately being traded, and all the drama that surrounded that relationship. Like, there was a ton of stuff that just happened to this team. And obviously you can't ignore it as a factor. But I think it would be short-sighted, naive, whatever word you want to use, maybe ignorant, to blame it all on those things. Because within that, there was also a team that struggled to find the identity that allowed it to succeed last year. And within that, there are multiple layers that need to be assessed. How much of it was free agent acquisitions that didn't fit that? How much of it was a focus at a so that would be management? How much of it was a focus on rush and rush generation and how they're going to create offense? And so that would fall on coaching. How much of it was on the players for, hey, I mean, the way they played last year, we've talked about this before, like it's hard work. It's a hard way to play. It requires a lot of commitment. So how much of that was on them for not willing to do that early in the season on a night in, night out, 60-minute basis? How many of the points they pissed away because of an unwillingness to do that early in the season? Could, you know, could that be the difference between these games right now actually meaning something? And so, yes, the injuries were massive and because they were to key guys. But I think there are other aspects here that you can't ignore. We didn't get into it that much at the time, but so much was made of this group coming together and arriving in Vancouver right out of the August long weekend two summers ago, and how that sort of set them up for success and the camaraderie. And they weren't all back at the same time this summer. So I think, you know, some of that, I think at every level, those questions are fair to ask and probably need to be asked and looked at. I think there was a belief that they'd reset a lot of the culture here based on the success of last season. And obviously there were still some elements, whether it's defensive identity, work rate, commitment to how you need to play under this system, under this coaching staff, that weren't baked into the DNA of this group, that went lacking. And you need to figure out whether it's the personnel or just the moment, why that happened. Because this isn't the first time, and, you know, there's not much left of the core, but this isn't the first time that this group has followed up success by not having the same work rate that created it, by not having the same discipline, by not having the same commitment. And so those are all fair questions to ask that I think they should be asking when they evaluate this. Like, if I hear at the end of the season when they all meet that it was just purely the injuries and bad luck, I think that will be doing a disservice to some of the other things that fell short of the standards that were set the year before and weren't lived up to at a nearly as consistent rate this year.
Well, and I was going to ask you just before we let you go here, Woodley, and maybe that is the answer. As you alluded to, they're going to do their year-end media availability towards the end of this week. What are you most curious to hear? And it could be from a specific player, from the coach, from management. What's kind of top of mind for you that you're hoping gets meaningfully addressed at the year-end presser?
Do we see any news? I mean, do we see a contract extension for the head coach by then?
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be first and foremost. Like, I think, and when you ask me that, Jamie, like, I think there are some bigger picture things, like a lot of sort of, you know, philosophical and culture elements to this conversation. But when you ask me that question, I go right to sort of, what am I going to get paid to write? Like, what's the quote unquote right. News of the day? And the news of the day is Rick Tocchet's status. And I think, created by Patrick Alvin's comments to Ian McIntyre, and maybe they would have come out anyways this weekend, but Elias Pettersson and his plans for the summer are now a focal point, right? Like, that's, we haven't had a chance to ask the player that, and it will clearly be asked. I think it's put a focus on what he's going to do. I think it's also fair to, like, you have the resources here, and yet You don't have ice.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's a second part to that, right? Like, guys don't want to have to drive to a different place to skate. And that goes back to, you know, what was a priority when this owner or this management group came in. It was having that facility. And here we are, and there's not a shovel in the ground. It probably wouldn't have been built anyways. But so when you tell a player, you say to us that you have the resources, beyond the personnel and the staffing, like, a facility that players want to come to. And that might, you know what, honestly, that might be part of guys not being here as early as they were 2 years ago in August. Like, because you don't have your own facility, you don't have your own spot. And it's obviously been something I've harped on for a long, long time. But I think that's a very real commitment that's been, frankly, lacking in an organization that's made a lot of other big commitments, and credit to them, Abbotsford, all those things. But, you know, I think that's a fair part of that question. And so what does Pettersson plan to do this summer? Will it be here? You know, I think there was some thought to, you know, as much as they might want him here, would Michigan be the next best spot with what the Hughes brothers do? And, you know, frankly, you talk about resources. Those guys leave no stone unturned, whether it's a Darryl Belfry coming in, all the experts of nutrition, fitness, everything. You know, would he be willing to do that? And at the end of the day, it's his prerogative wherever he wants to go. Team can't dictate it. So that becomes a storyline that, honestly, I didn't have on my storylines until those quotes in Ian McIntyre's piece this week. And I think it will be a big focus of the questioning as we get into the season breakdown this weekend.
Woodley, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate it. And enjoy the last couple games of the season here. Enjoy the playoffs getting underway. We'll talk again soon.
My life is easy. I don't have to worry about pronouncing all these new names tonight. I just got to spell them.
Well, Tolopilo is like phonetically easy. Kudryavtsev trips me up a little bit, as you probably just heard there.
You've just got to get the second.
It shouldn't be that hard.
You've just got to get the first V. Kudryavtsev.
Listen.
There's only one.
You guys are forgetting. There's a whole other team on the other side of it.
That's a good point.
They just called up three new guys that I need to Google to find.
All right, Woodley, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. And Kevin Woodley just saying, yeah, top of mind for him is going to be the status of Rick Tocchet. When we do hear from management and the coaches and players, or the coach and players, at the end of the season media availability later this week. And we can talk a little bit more about the Rick Tocchet situation. Will there be a resolution? When? All of that on the other side. Send your text in as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk next on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Couple of open segments to finish up the show here. So send your thoughts and questions in. But still some newsy, or at least rumory, stuff to get into around the Canucks going into the final week of the season here. I mentioned in the whiteboard during the broadsheet section that Elliot Friedman reporting a decision on Tocchet's future will happen soon, one way or another. He also elaborated on that, I think, on Donnie and Dolly this morning, that if they're going to keep Tocchet, he's going to end up being the highest paid Canucks coach in history, which is kind of not surprising, because as we've heard throughout this story unfolding, and we've all known, they're not a team that has prioritized spending big money on their coaches. So it makes perfect sense that with Tocchet having won the Jack Adams last year, led the team to their far and away their most successful season in recent memory, has the full backing of the captain and the franchise player in Quinn Hughes. Management has never said anything but an extremely supportive, positive word about what they've done. They went through a tremendous ordeal and took a big hit in the public eye to hire him in the first place. Like, Tocchet has a lot of leverage here. You add that all up, it would be pretty surprising if he accepted a deal that didn't make him the highest paid Canucks head coach in history.
Well, also, we're not talking about a very high bar. The Canucks have largely sat on the sidelines through this era of coaching salary inflation, right? The last big name coach that this organization brought in was John Tortorella. And back then, coaches' salary is like $2 million a year. You know, by the time he went...
Somebody texted in the inbox, didn't Torts get five? He got 5 years.
5 years at two,
at two per. Million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the time he signed with Columbus, right, netting the Canucks that second round pick that they used to select Jonah Gadjevich, that deal with Columbus was for double the salary. And that was because Babcock had signed for five plus in Toronto, and that sort of changed the economics for coaches. And then there was a little bit of a post-pandemic rollback, but you would expect, you know, I mean, what is a John Cooper worth, really?
Oh, I mean, a lot.
I think you could argue
what he's done for that organization. He's worth an awful lot.
And given that there's no cap, right? Given that it's non-cap spending, I mean, I think it's worth a lot to have one of the, you know, four or five coaches that absolutely no question about it really matter. Is Tockett one of those guys? Remains to be seen. I think he's got that type of upside, to be totally honest with you. But anyway, so
everything management has done indicates that they think he has the potential to be one of those guys.
Oh, absolutely.
Like every signal they've sent says, hey, we think we could have, you know, one of the four or five best coaches in the NHL here on our hands.
Yeah, no, he's their guy. And so anyway, just to like do the brief history of coaches in the Aquilini era, right? You have Mark Crawford's dismissal, right? He was a big name coach brought in by the previous ownership group. And then Alain Vigneault, who had been the coach of the Manitoba Moose at the time, he'd had an NHL job in Montreal. It hadn't gone great, right? So he was sort of a reclamation project young coach at the time that the Canucks hired him. Obviously, that worked out swimmingly. He's the winningest coach in franchise history. Then they go from Vigneault to Torts, which is sort of the exception here. That was and now Torts gets fired after one season on a five-year deal. So you might wonder if that was like a big, what do they call them in corporate speak? A key learning for the organization. You know, they swung big for the coach, ended up on the hook for a lot of years of salary, which Tortorella didn't work after the season went well off the rails. He was largely responsible for Roberto Luongo leaving and, of course, tried to fight Bob Hartley memorably during a game. Then you go to Travis Green. No. Then you go to Willie DeJardin.
Willie DeJardin from Junior, yeah.
Now, DeJardin was a first-time head coach. And you'll recall, Trevor Linden replaced Mike Gillis. He was the president. And they had to, like, wait a while. Like, they didn't fire Tortorella right away. Trevor Linden, like, reviewed and fired Tortorella, something like 4 to 6 weeks later. They were sort of, you know, it was actually funny because Jim Rutherford, then the new general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, similarly found himself hired late in the cycle, and they were both kind of scrambling for coaches. So there was like the best WHL coach, which was Mike Johnston, who has longstanding ties to the Canucks organization. And then you had, Willie DeJardin, who was, you know, won the Calder Cup with the Texas Stars that year. And they sort of bid it out for those guys with the Canucks landing Willie DeJardin. DeJardin was first-time NHL head coach. And then Travis Green, first-time NHL head coach, was also their minor league coach. And by the way, he was out of contract when they hired him to be a coach. The Canucks did not allow him to interview elsewhere. So they really did sort of put their finger on the scale to make sure they got Green. Then you have Boudreau, who was, you know, handed something of a, like, way back into the game, right? Experienced guy, obviously, but it was a short-term deal. 1 year with a mutual option, as we know. And then
I think notable also there that Boudreau hasn't gotten a job after that, right? Like, it was kind of last chance time for Bruce Boudreau at that stage of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, it's interesting because he probably does get another job if he hadn't accepted his mutual option.
Right.
Like, he would have gotten another job off of the Bruce There It Is run.
Yeah, off the bump.
Yeah.
But not the season that followed.
No.
No, indeed.
And so that brings us to where we are today. And it's like the Canucks have basically throughout the last decade kind of missed out on some of the serious salary inflation that we've seen for coaches. And that's been, you know, I think partly by design and partly by circumstance, you know, things like not extending Travis Green after the bubble the way you might have in a non-COVID season, you know, served to sort of restrain his salary. Focusing on developmental coaches, not landing guys with significant experience or resumes. I mean, that's been sort of the and when they have, it's been guys who have been out of the league for multiple seasons, right? Not like hot commodity types, but guys that the organization took a chance on. Tockett would be among them,
yeah.
Right? You'd sort of count Tockett among that group. So
And it's interesting because I don't have a problem with the idea of...
No, they've landed good coaches.
Yeah, that's the thing. Of taking chances on, hey, we've been developing Travis Green in the minors, and we think there's upside there. Let's hire him. And by the way, Rick Tocchet got a bet. You know, he had some tough times in Arizona, but we think there's stuff there.
Both good bets.
Yeah.
That have paid out.
That's, I think, a smart way. Rather than just saying, like, oh, this flashy name is available. Let's go hire him.
Totally.
But if you're
better off with Tocchet or Green than you would be with Peter Laviolette.
Yeah.
You know, like, you are better off with Tocchet or Green than you are with Todd McClellan. You know, now, mm-hmm. I do think that the top coaches, like Jim Montgomery, has obviously been worth his weight in gold for the St. Louis Blues, for example. But, you know, Knobloch in Edmonton, mm-hmm. right? That was a great find. He's a first-time head coach in the NHL. So I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that, like, strategy of identifying your coaches and going and finding them and saying, hey, let's cast a little bit of a wider net, and we're not so worried about name value and all that. But where the rubber hits the road is it's fine to kind of make these buy low bets, but then when if they're really successful by your own metrics, you can't let it fall apart over money, right? Because then you're not, it almost suggests that you're avoiding the flashy, big name, expensive coaches, not because of any kind of philosophical bent that you think it's actually more effective to go the other route, but purely because of money. So I have no problem going the less heralded coaching route when you're making a search, if you're willing to pay that guy once he earns it. And again, put aside your own feelings about Rick Tocchet, because I know there's a very vocal contingent of Canucks fans who are deeply critical.
Who can't believe that Rick Tocchet would try to sit on a lead when Teddy Bluger and Atu Ratu are his middle six centers.
Who are deeply, deeply critical of what he's done. I'm purely talking for right now about the club's own assessment. And again, every single piece of information we have is that they're thrilled with the job Rick Tocchet has done. They were really optimistic about hiring him. And from what we can tell, he has absolutely met those expectations. And so if that's the situation, and again, it kind of sounds like we're redoing the Villander conversation almost, right? Where it's like, what's the holdup? Like, maybe there's a philosophical difference. Maybe there's a direction thing, or Rick Tocchet says, you know what? I don't like the way this is going, or whatever. I want a different challenge. I want to do something else. That's fine. But it can't fall apart over money. It can't fall apart because you're balking at, you know, going to market rate for a coach like Rick Tocchet.
No.
And I don't think it will. It really shouldn't. Let's just put it that way. It would be really disappointing if it did.
I don't think it will either. I think the more interesting conversation is, what does Tocchet want, right? A fair deal is like, that's the easy stuff. That's baseline.
That's like, okay, fair deal, then let's talk about direction and all that.
Yeah, right. Fair deal gets us to the table.
Yeah.
But what are the other factors that have to be met, right? That have to be in place to convince Tocchet that this is a place he can win.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a fascinating dynamic here, and presumably one that will unfold post-haste, right?
It's interesting, though, Friedman's reporting about expect this to get done relatively quickly, one way or another.
Yes.
I hear that, and to me, that makes me think Tocchet's more likely to stay, because the conversations you're describing, I think you're bang on, and we've heard over and over, not just from Friedman, but Saravalli, Dhaliwal, that, hey, there's going to be more. Yes, dollars and cents and term are going to be a topic of conversation between the Canucks and Tocchet, but there's going to be other things. And can you get all those other things buttoned down, you know, in the 48 hours or 72 hours after the Canucks play their final game? Because Rick Tocchet has said, well, he's not really going to talk about it until after the season. You know, he's not going to negotiate.
Yeah,
it seems like a bit of an accelerated timeline to me.
Often, though, like, his commentary was, I'm not going to comment while I'm fighting to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's true.
Oftentimes, you'd be amazed by how much time for conversations people...
Once people the playoffs in hockey, are not a thing.
Once mathematical elimination is secured.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really handicap it one way or the other, to be totally honest with you. I would sort of take the Friedman commentary as an indication that, you know, the Canucks want to get the deal done.
Yeah.
And that perhaps some of the hardball posture has softened significantly in terms of doing so, right? Like, this is the guy they want.
Which we heard a little bit from Patrick Alvin and his comments to Ian McIntyre, right? Well, hey, you know, we want a coach who wants to be here, right?
So, and so they'll, you know, that's how I read it. And I think that's a fair read. Like my view is that's what it most likely implies. I don't sort of view it as handicapping the probability
that's fair.
Of a deal ultimately getting done one way or the other. I'll be fascinated to see it. I don't really have a sense of it one way or the other, to be totally honest with you, Jamie.
Yeah.
Beyond saying that, you know, I do think there's a lot of curiosity around the league in terms of exactly what shape this takes from Tockett's perspective.
Well, and if we don't get an announcement of some sort before they speak to the media, that's certainly going to be a major topic of conversation, as Woodley alluded to earlier as well. Yeah. That's kind of one of the top of mind things for him.
And
understandably so.
Canucks management and coaches often talk after the players, so you'd expect we hear from them at some point this weekend, right? That's not a lot of time.
No, that's what I mean.
But ideally, like, you know what? Honestly, also, I would say this. If Tockett appears on the dais with Alvin and Rutherford, I think that's a very good sign that a deal is either close or going to get done.
Yeah, because you can also get the, like, non-announcement, but you're like, hey, you know, we're working on it and I really want to be here. That kind of thing, right?
Totally.
Where it's like, we're 90% of the way there, yeah. But we haven't put pen to paper yet.
Yeah, exactly. We still got some things to sort out, but,
yeah,
right? That,
exactly.
That is a good sign. If, you know, and if he leaves, it probably happens in a press release, and then that year-end availability is discussing the path forward without Tockett.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. And so that's also something we'll listen to with a keen ear on, you know, today and like post game tonight, post game Wednesday, especially post game Wednesday.
Right. Yeah.
You know, does it sound like a goodbye? Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, oftentimes, even if you're talking about experienced poker players, you're talking about an emotional situation.
Tip your hand a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Speaking of Canucks head coach Rick Tockett, let's hear from him when he addressed the media earlier today.
Yeah. Kirill's had really, a really good year. Like, his thing has opened up a lot of guys' eyes. So, has a chance to play, obviously, with Mizey being out. It's fun to see these guys, see how they go in an NHL environment.
Mizey's case, you know, I know he's skating. Is there,
yeah,
like, not a lot at stake right now? But, I mean, does he want to play? Whose decision?
Oh, I mean, he wants to play, yeah. It's my decision. Like, you know, he's still hurting a bit. I mean, he could play, but, he's out there now skating, like, literally skating. But, you know, I think he's with the coaches himself, with Sergei, working on his game. And, you know, he's not going to play the next two games. So, that's the attitude and the type of guy you want on your team. So.
Do you have an update on Robert? Sorry.
No, nothing yet. I don't know whether he's going to get surgery or something. He's got that broken orbital bone. I texted with him today. So I thought I was going to see him down here today, but no, I don't have an update.
Tough year for him with his father and the knee. But he brought a lot to your back end. You think of the PK. What about his contribution?
Yeah, really one of our favorites. A guy that banged up pretty well all year. Obviously, the death of his father was a big huge. And I think what he's done for us in the PK, in the locker room, you know, he's a guy that I think if he gets healthy, he can really help your hockey club. He's got to get healthy. You know, he's probably got a couple things he's got to work on, but he's definitely a guy that really helps your team.
Guys who have had this injury or only needed a minor procedure have come back and played. Right. I know he's a UFA, but you really like them all year, and maybe he's a guy who might figure in down the road.
Yeah, for sure. There's something that definitely that he's on the radar to talk about because, you know, there has been some positive stuff this year in our PK. I think we let three the other night and we're still like third in the league. That's an exciting part for the PK guy, and he's one of our top PK guys.
Talked earlier about Mizey. I mean, Demko, I know you mentioned illness, which generally doesn't shut a guy down for an entire week. Is there any more to it than that?
I think for me, like, why play him? You know, every year he's had to get surgery. God forbid he's feeling great. He's got a good plan in place this summer. I talked to him the other day about his plan, which is terrific. He's almost got his plan to a day what he's doing, and so I don't have to worry about him coming into camp and in shape and stuff, but I want him to be mentally strong, and I think him being in surgery free, injury free going in the summer is big. He hasn't had it in three, I don't know, since I've been here, so I think it's important. Why risk it, him playing a game here? You know, the other day he couldn't play, he was sick, but why even risk it? So that's our philosophy.
Just to confirm,
Tolopilois.
Yeah, yeah, he'll play tonight. Yes.
Is there anything, like, the stakes aren't here anymore now that you've been eliminated, but even at this stage of your career, like, is there still an excitement to see these guys realize their dream and get a first game in the NHL?
Oh, it's huge. You know, like your first NHL hockey game. And I think I told you guys, you know, you want the veterans to, because, you know, the veterans had their first game. But I always think there's a point, like, to this game. And, you know, we talked today about our neutral zone is, you know, the second half of the Minnesota game, stopped skating. Nobody was hitting the blue lines with speed. So we did a video on that. I want to see that tonight. Like, that's one thing, you know, whatever happens, happens. You know, I think defensively, most of the time, we're pretty good there. But I'd like to see us really hit those blue lines with speed and make some plays. We talked about it today. I don't care who we are. I think that's a point of I want to see tonight. So let's see who can do that tonight. Even the young guys. I think it's important.
Do you have a message for those young guys, maybe if they have some nerves heading into their first games?
Yeah, I think we try to give them not too much. Just really have some fun. And like I said, that was one of our points. You get, I don't care if you're Ty Mueller or you're Kirill, if you're the fourth guy, get up there. You know, be the fourth guy. Just because you're a rookie or you're in the NHL, sometimes you know, you don't want to make a mistake. You can't play that way. So, you know, especially now, it's not, you know, there's nothing at stake. You know, if there's a chance to go for it, go for it. You might as well do it now. That's kind of the messaging.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking a little bit about Thatcher Demko and shutting him down for the season. And as I said earlier, the line is why risk it? And Woodley agreed broadly with that reasoning when we had him on earlier in the show. And, you know, talking also about the opportunities for guys like Kirill Kurjavsev and Nikita Tolopilo in the crease as well. Tyler texts in. We were talking about Rick Tockett's future, and he says, I look forward to Wednesday when we're discussing how long Tockett stayed on the bench to wave farewell to fans for the season. Did he stand too long, or was it too quick? We don't know. We'll see. We will read the body language and read the tea leaves from Rick Tockett when the season ends on Wednesday against Vegas. All right, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts and questions in. We've got an open segment coming up next. We can talk just a little bit about, you know, maybe some of the guys making their debuts here. Anything else that you want to get into on the other side as well. So hit us up again, 650-652, the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we will be back for one final segment of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We are live.
That noodling, it is very formless.
This isn't even noodling. This is like barely noodling.
This is crooner.
Well, it would be like the backing track for a crooner.
Yeah.
This is a melody.
Still formless.
No, it's not.
Too formless for me.
Do you not like Sinatra? Rat Pack?
Sinatra.
Are you a big Sinatra guy?
Did you listen to 32 this morning?
No, I didn't.
If I want to hear someone speak like RFK over formless noodling, I'll just KMS.
I'd love to hear your Canucks takes over formless noodling.
Would you?
Yeah.
You want to hear it?
Yeah, go.
Keep playing it. They should have rebuilt when I said they should.
Give us some tone. They should have rebuilt when I said they should.
The national media is gaslighting you to think that this thing is normal. It's far worse than normal. What is this team if Quinn Hughes leaves? It's bleak.
All right. Wow. Off-season content starts early.
Oh
here
boy.
On Canucks Talk.
Hey, Dom dared me into it. I'm That's blaming true. Dom. And
of course, you can't turn down a dare.
No.
Imagine if he double dared you. Oh, and you would have been up against
then
it.
Then I would have used real takes.
Yeah.
And not just done caricature negative ones.
Nice cover there.
Thanks.
That was smart. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing there. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. NHL.com. All right, before we dive back into the inbox, probably worth touching on just in a little more detail the NHL debut for Kirill Kudryavtsev tonight against the San Jose Sharks, left shot defensive prospect for the Canucks. And of course, notable, he's a seventh round pick in 2022. And for him personally, I mean, just to make it to the NHL and play an NHL game as a seventh round pick is really, really difficult. So a huge moment for him, and congratulations to him. As Tocchet had said, you know, he's had a good year down in Abbotsford, opened a lot of people's eyes. Now, I will say, contrary to our boss, Cam Barra, who came in all excited because he thought he had a really great trivia tidbit.
He thought he had a really great trivia tidbit where the answer was Mario Bliznak.
Mario Bliznak, yes, because he was like, who was the last seventh round pick of the Canucks to play for the Canucks? And I was like, Aiden McDonough? And he was like, dang it, I forgot about him. But he did, in fact, play games for the Canucks. Before that, it was Mario Bliznak. So that's going backwards. I think, what was that, 2005 draft?
My God.
Yeah, and Mario Bliznak played six NHL games.
Same as Aiden McDonough.
There you go.
Wow.
So can Kirill Kudryavtsev crack six?
Over under? I mean, the odds would say under.
I'll take the over. Oh, yeah. Aiden McDonough also. Oh, yeah, you just said that. Sorry, I was thinking Rodrigo Abels. How many? Because he played for Philly this year. He played 22, not with the Canucks, but for Philly.
Oh, my God.
You know, 2016 seventh round pick for the Vancouver Canucks.
Rodrigo Abels, the seventh round pick who was like days away from being eligible to sign as a restricted unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And he makes it to the league in the year 2024. So cool.
Because that's the other part of this. It's not just to make it, to play an NHL game as a seventh round pick. He's only 21. Like, he just turned 21 in February.
Yeah.
So it's on an accelerated timeline, relative to other people in that draft class. This is the 2022 draft we're talking about. Like, DPD, he's only played 26 NHL games. Lekkomäki's played 24 NHL games. So incredible accelerated timeline for a seventh round pick. Now, who knows? If you ask me to take the over under on six, I'll take the over.
Well, I'm just saying,
yeah,
I think that's perfectly fair. I would make you the even money bet on the other side of it, just because probability dictates that these opportunities are real hard to come by.
Yeah.
Right. But man, very, very cool for Kudryavtsev, given where he's come from. I mean, this is not just a guy who was picked in the seventh round. This is a guy who, Vancouver had run out of players on their list. That's the apocryphal draft story for Kudryavtsev.
Mm-hmm.
And he's developed really well, like right from the gate. You know, that very first dev camp, then that first sort of OHL season after he was picked, he lit it up, right? His scoring exploded, started to play huge minutes for the Sioux. And, I mean, his development's been really, really interesting. Now, he is that player type where it's really difficult to make it. Like, it's difficult to get shots when you're undersized and left-handed in mm-hmm. the NHL, right, mm-hmm. as a defenseman. And then even if you do, you have to be so, so special to stick. You know, think about the
we're talking Erik Brännström, right?
Brännström.
This is what we're talking about.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're not quite at the level offensively where we're going to trust you to quarterback power play one.
Yeah, and also not that we're going to, like, overlook your flaws. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Like, your offensive upside isn't so undeniable that it excuses a bunch of things in the defensive end.
No. So you sort of end up as a tweener is the usual term, where it's, like, pretty difficult to find opportunities, pretty difficult to stick for any NHL team, and that's sort of what Kudryavtsev is up against. Now, we see with some shorter players or smaller of stature defenders, Jared Spurgeon would be like the highest end example. Now, he is a righty, but nonetheless, where your defensive acumen is so high end that you can carve out a niche,
mm-hmm.
right? That you can maybe even become a top four or better defenseman. But the bar to clear from a hockey IQ and like defensive IQ perspective is just absolutely through the roof for a player with Kudryavtsev's player type. So, you know, it's just not equal. It's like with a player like Ratu, there's like a safe floor. Big bodied guy who wins draws. Guess what? That guy doesn't have to hit.
Yes.
Almost at all. Right? Like if Ratu never improves over who he is now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying if a world where Ratu never improves from the level that he's at now, he's going to play 350 plus games in his NHL career.
Mm-hmm.
If the same holds true for Kudryavtsev, he's going to play two.
Well, just on that point, because we brought him up earlier in the show, former Canucks first rounder Brendan Gaunce, 6'3" center, has played 189 games in the NHL over the course of like 10 seasons without ever really being a full-time guy, because it's like you're in the NHL and we have a center injury, we're going to call you up. You know what I mean? And that's like, as you said, that's like the floor for Atu Ratu. It's like, hey, you're 6'2" and you can play center, you can win some draws, you're going to have a way to hang around in the NHL. More difficult path for Kudryavtsev. Yeah. But
again, and Gaunce isn't as good as Ratu in the faceoff circle.
Yeah. But he still gets those opportunities, right? Because reliable because of his physical traits and all of those things. Yeah. So tough path ahead for Kudryavtsev. But again, he's already massively exceeded expectations for your typical seventh round pick, especially a relatively recent seventh round pick. And again, huge congratulations to him for earning the shot in the NHL. We'll see what he can do with it. See how he can figure in, if he can just put himself in a position to be a regular call-up option for this team going into next season or years beyond that as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And Ed texted this in earlier in the last segment when we were having the conversation about Rick Tocchet and, you know, hey, it's money in term, but he also needs to have these bigger picture directional conversations with the team. Is everyone on board? Is everyone aligned? Love that word. Is everyone aligned with where things are going for the Canucks? And Ed texts in, are you guys just walking on eggshells about Tocchet and Petey? Now, we didn't directly reference Elias Pettersson in that segment, but in past times when we've had similar conversations, I've made the point that if you're having a big picture conversation, like if you're Rick Tocchet and you want to have big picture conversations about the direction of the team with management, there's really two guys you're talking about. It's Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. Now, there are other things around the edges, like, hey, what are your plans for Brock Besser? Lecker Mackey, is he ready? Development path for him? Sure, those things might come up. But if you're having big picture conversations about the future of the Canucks franchise, you're talking about Quinn Hughes and you're talking about Elias Pettersson. Now, that's not to say anything about, like, somebody else texted in, can Pettersson and Tocchet coexist? Well, they seem to coexist really well for the first, 80 games of Rick Tocchet's tenure here in Vancouver. I think it's absolutely possible. I don't think it means just because if he wants to have conversations with management about, hey, what's going on with Elias Pettersson? What are your thoughts on him? Where do you see this going? I don't think it means it's a binary thing, right? Like, hey, I'm gone if he's sticking around. I don't think it's as simple as that. But yeah, if you're going to be having those types of conversations with the front office, of course Elias Pettersson's name is going to come up. How could it not? We talk about it all the time. Yeah, you better believe the head coach is going to want to know exactly what they're thinking going into the summer with a player like Elias Pettersson. So I don't think it's walking on eggshells. I mean, there's only so much we can say about it without knowing the inner thoughts of all of the parties involved. But yeah, if part of it comes down to what Tocchet thinks is in the cards for the future, where this is likely going with this team, then Pettersson's going to be a big part of that. Of course he is.
What's the first job for any NHL player?
Be available?
Well, number one. Number two.
What?
Second job. Earn trust.
Mm.
Right? The number one thing that will determine your success in the NHL or not is to earn your coach's trust. And that's why we often see when a coach changes jobs, you know, if you've done the job in the past for that coach, you might get another shot for them, right? Like you earn one guy's trust and you'll usually have it, you know, for an extended period of time. I mean, think about Adam Gaudette's glow up for Travis Green in Ottawa this year, right? Earn a coach's trust. Now, the stakes are obviously different for a guy at the bottom end of the lineup, a guy who can do a job, right? And a guy at the top end of the lineup where what a coach is looking for is, you know, for you to be the reason they win games. But how much trust do you think Rick Tocchet, like if you were Rick Tocchet, how much trust would you have in Elias Pettersson coming out of this season and the playoffs last year?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
How could you?
How could you? So, you know, I mean, people always want to jump to the conversation being like, you know, as you described it, binary, but it could be what's the plan for this guy? How do we get to a point where, you know, how do we get to a point where when I'm game planning, I'm confident that he's an ace in my hand as opposed to something I need to work to protect?
Or something, as you know, as Patrick Alvin memorably said earlier about the whole team, like, I don't know what I'm getting when I drive to the rink.
Right.
You know what I mean? You need you need your best players not to be in that category. Ideally, you don't want anyone on your team in that category, right? Because everyone's playing to their role and you've put them in positions to succeed. But at a bare minimum, you need your best players, your highest paid players, not to be in that category.
Well, and I'd add this, like, okay, Tockett's going to be, if Tockett is back and is going to be made the most expensive, the highest paid coach in franchise history, great. I'm all for it. I believe in Tockett. Okay, and no surprise to our listeners, but I think very highly of this head coach as just like an EQ hockey tactician. I do not want to see another haphazard reporting structure on the power play.
Sure.
I think you need an experienced, offensive-minded head coach with experience running a power play to come in. And I think when Tockett's had the most success, he's brought in some really interesting assistant coaches to work with him on special teams. He brought in Scotty Allen to run the penalty kill in Arizona, and they were like the shorthanded goal masters. Mm-hmm. I think he literally cribbed some of that and continues to deploy it in terms of how the Canucks exert down ice pressure on the PK. I think that's like something meaningful. Adam Oates, he hired Adam Oates. He gave Adam Oates his first assistant coaching job. Adam Oates literally installed the 1-3-1. Stamkos scored 50 goals in his second year. And over the course of the next 15 years, Adam Oates' tactics changed the way hockey is played, with Alex Ovechkin being one of like the prime beneficiaries. I mean, Wayne Gretzky's record doesn't fall without Tockett hiring Oates, like butterfly effect stuff in Tampa Bay all those years ago. I want to see this club add another assistant coach. I want to see them added, and I want to see them have a power play portfolio. Like, this team has too much talent to be middle of the pack, 12th, 13th in power play success rate. So, you know, that's a big question for me. I think there are ways of bringing Tockett back that make a ton of sense, and there are ways of bringing Tockett back that I think would make less sense, would make me less enthusiastic about the overall organizational direction there. And look, you know what's expensive? An experienced power play coach. Like, those are pricey assistant coaches. We saw this club decline to pay a pricey experienced American League bench boss. He went and ran a top power play, by the way, for the New Jersey Devils this year in Jeremy Colliton. They declined to pay Mike Yeo, an experienced assistant coach, who went to Ottawa, and that team's making the playoffs this year. Like, at some point, you know, as much as it's great if the club is willing to make Tockett a market rate offer, it can't stop there. There's more personnel that needs to be brought in.
Well, and I would say it's easy to look at, because I think you're bang on about the power play thing, right? Like, just fill out the coaching staff beyond just Rick Tockett. Obviously, Rick Tockett's going to be the focus, the figurehead, all of that, the most important piece, but there's more to it than that. But on the Pettersson conversation as well with Rick Tockett, it's easy to look at it as simple as, you know, does Rick Tockett like Pettersson? Does he believe in Pettersson? Is Petey a Tockett guy? But from management's perspective, again, if you're investing in Rick Tockett at a significant pay bump, you want to make sure that you believe in his ability to work with Elias Pettersson as well, right? Like, you want to make sure he's on board. So there really does have to be alignment that everyone gets. Okay, here's what we're trying to do. Here are the players who are going to be important. And Tockett, we need to know that you feel like you can work with them and get the best out of them. So it is a two-way conversation. And as you said, it doesn't have to be binary. Rick Tockett could have a fair degree of optimism, or at least be a believer in the skill set of Elias Pettersson, but just not have that trust yet. What's the path forward to getting that trust? How do you develop that trust? Can you? Does Rick Tockett feel that you can develop that trust between him and Elias Pettersson as early as next season, which is when you need to do it, or at least you need to be well on the road by doing it early next season?
I think the other thing that is going to be important for this organization to manage far better next season than they have the last two is they have to find a way to ease off Quinn Hughes.
Is that the new, like, you have to find a way not to overplay Thatcher Demko?
Well, I don't want it to be the new one. That's the point. It's like, both years we've had this conversation, and both years I think it bit the Canucks in the behind down the stretch. In Hughes's case, I mean, I didn't think he had legs against the Wild in a way that I've very rarely seen. here's just the raw numbers, man. Since Quinn Hughes returned from injury against the Los Angeles Kings following the Four Nations break, okay, he's played 19 games.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously leads the Canucks in ice time in that, he doesn't, but, well, he leads the Canucks in ice time on a
per game
basis. Yeah. by a wide margin. But the Canucks have been outshot in Hughes' minutes. Now, only by 5, but here's the thing. Hughes is like time cop. Like, he bends space and time. He controls games like a maestro, like very few other players in the league. That's why he's Quinn effing Hughes,
mm-hmm.
right? Quinn Hughes outshot at 5-on-5 across a stretch of 19 games? I don't know that I've ever seen it. I didn't see it in the depths of the sort of Boudreaux unstructured era. I didn't see it in the depths of the Travis Green can't buy a goal era. Like, Quinn Hughes is one of the best players, if not the best defenseman on the planet, outshot and outscored by an even wider margin, by the way. 12 goals for, 22 against. Like, as this team has sagged down the stretch, I think their over-reliance on Quinn Hughes has, like, emerged as the wider trend that I'm most concerned about. You know, like, it's...
Yeah. And just to put those numbers in context, before that... And I just did a really quick from the beginning of the season to the end of January in 47 games for Quinn Hughes, outshot opponents by more than 100 at 5-on-5, 482 to 369, outscored them by 18, 52 to 34. So, like, massive advantages in favor of the Canucks. You remember when...
That's the logic of how this team wins.
Yeah. When the Kraken came through, I think it was our pal Allison Lucan who kind of publicized the... When Quinn Hughes is on the ice, it's, like, comparable to some of the best play-controlling teams we've seen in the last decade.
Ever, yeah.
Right? That's the level he was at in the first half plus of the season.
Flat-out Hart Trophy level. But... Down the stretch, coming back from that injury, he didn't have that juice. Well, this team has to be more careful in managing his minutes. They have to put him in a position to be playing like that at this point in the year. They have to construct a team that doesn't need Quinn Hughes to play 27 minutes against Chicago in November. You know? Like, that's the task at hand. And I think this team's over-reliance on Quinn Hughes, which is partly Hughes is doing too, right? Talkett always talks about him looking back and wanting to go out, and, you know, they've got to find a relationship where Hughes understands how he's optimally used and abides by it, and they figure out a way to collectively pace themselves. I think that, to me, would be like my other, for all the unfair criticism lobbed to Talkett, I don't know that we've talked about that enough. And it's not like the 30 minute games that Quinn Hughes has played that have gone into overtime as the Canucks have, like, clawed for their playoff lives. I don't have a problem with that. What else are you going to do? The stakes are massive. But the games that I sort of look back on, 25-36 against Chicago on November 16th. Next night, Nashville, 27-25. That's back-to-back games against non-playoff teams in mid-November. Followed that up with a 28-minute game against the New York Rangers on the 19th. Right? He played 31 minutes in Detroit because they were trailing. That's December 1. You know, and it's just like the collection of that. That's all in a two-week span.
Mm-hmm.
That's what can't happen. Like, that can't happen again because this team's too dependent on Hughes, and that leaves them brittle, right? That leaves this team's roster construction extraordinarily brittle. Operation Keep Quinn Hughes also requires this team to optimize their usage of Hughes next season, which they abjectly failed to do over the course of this season, and it cost them both in terms of him getting injured and then not being on form when they needed points the most.
And I think you're right that it has to be a two-way street and a partnership. And, you know, it's easy to use the, well, you know, Quinn Hughes wants to play. He's so competitive, super competitive, and he's so good. You know, hey, he's telling me he wants to play. That's fine, and that's great. You love to see that from your captain, that desire to get out there, that desire to still be helping the team. I mean, even in these meaningless games down the stretch, but you have to be able to step in as well. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have the trust in that relationship to be able to say, like, hey, man, we get it, but it's going to be better this way. We're going to stop, right? You know what I mean? Like, we can't play you tonight, or we're going to dial your minutes back. And is there going to be some friction there? Yeah, but that's part of a working relationship in the NHL. Sometimes there's going to be friction. Sometimes players are going to disagree with decisions that the coach makes, but you still have to be able to work together and all pull in the same direction. And again, this is not a criticism of Quinn Hughes, because what do you want? You love that the guy is desperate to get out there and fight with his teammates. Of course you do. You just have to find a way to also make sure it's not harming the team. It's also not putting him in a position where he's going to be so far short of 100%, as we've seen for the last couple of months here. It has to be a two-way street and a conversation with him.
Yeah, and I'd add too, like, it's not as if Hughes was at his best down the stretch last season either, right? Like, it's not like Hughes was at his dominant best in the playoffs.
Nope, it wasn't.
So at some point, I do think this team needs to take a hard look at that. For me, anyway, those are the big challenges for Tocchet, whether he's back or not. I do think there are areas that this team needs to address on the staff and new priorities that the team needs to sort of find and work with Tocchet to achieve next season.
All right, it's the Canucks versus Macklin Celebrini and the Sharks tonight at Rogers Arena. Penultimate game of the season. We'll be back on tomorrow. Jason Bukala going to join us a day earlier than usual, so he'll be on the show tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.